we're not human doings, and we're not machines. And human beings need that connectivity, need that personal touch, need that interaction to get to that, to make sure we are connecting to the individual and building that trust. Once that trust is there, then I think I build it. So I would think about building this trust circle that actually we have, where you can actually, so on, and keep on expanding. If you have people, you need to do more. If you have more people, then you need more.
This is the Indianness Podcast, stories of success from leaders and change makers of Indian origin. Why have Indians achieved success across so many different disciplines around the globe? I have no idea, but let's find out together, because every story is unique. I'm very excited to have Ramesh Rajdhan with us today. He's the CIO and CTO for Bain & Company. He has been in leadership roles also for the Boston Consulting Group and EMC Dell. He's also received many industry awards and is a regular speaker at many forums. I invited him on this show as I'm fascinated by his journey from Savitrabhai Phule University in Pune to Bain & Company in Boston. Welcome, Ramesh. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on our podcast.
Delighted to be here and share my story.
Wonderful. Ramesh, as discussed before the show, this podcast is called Indianness, where we really chronicle the journeys of people. A lot of time people always look into the future, they don't go into the past, but it's really about trying to figure out your journey so it can serve as an inspiration in terms of guidance and others for people. To really understand how you got here, we need to go right to the beginning, or maybe even before the beginning. Tell us where you were born. Tell us about your parents, or if there were any grandparents. Just walk us a little bit through that.
I come from the remote village in India, in Kashmir. I come from the northern part of India, in Kashmir. And my father, I was so glad to have very loving parents. And I'm the youngest of my four brothers. I'm the youngest son. I had three elder brothers in my family. So mostly we were, I would say my family kind of blends right side of the brain and left side of the brain. My father was a literary genius, not to do with anything with computers, anything like that. And we come from a very, I would say, humble and basic background. We were lower middle class, I would say, in stuff, but more of in a remote village in Kashmir, where education and all those things were a little bit of scarcity, and we can get into a lot more details as we go through the process. I come from a remote village. I think the education was basic out there, and I think there are very few people in the world who have come from that part of the world and are where I am, and I am so thankful to and express gratitude to whatever the power is out there that actually has made it happen.
Let's unpack. You said a lot of things. Firstly, tell us the name of that village. I'm very curious to know.
The name of that village is a small village. It's called Mahanur. It's from the Srinagar. It's roughly 19 kilometers from Srinagar that I studied in. At least my primary school, middle school, and high school was a little far away. So that's the part I grew up. It's kind of northern Kashmir, you would say, that in northern part of the Kashmir.
You said right brain, left brain. So let's talk a little bit about that, because that has an implication and influence over you. Dad was a literary person. So what did he do for a profession? So just tell us a little more detail.
My father was, well, you can look at him. He was a historian. He was a poet. He was awarded one of the highest awards in the Indian government, which is called Padma Shri that year. So he was a historian.
Wow.
Was the chief editor of encyclopedia for the Academy of Kashmir, what is called J&K Academy of Cultural Arts and Languages. So he was doing that for a living, and he was always into that. Most of us, I think my mother was more important in our family, because she kind of took care of the day-to-day affairs, while my father was busy thinking about all the literary work and researching what happened, how it happened, and what the other parts of the world, which are kind of, I would say, right side of the brain. And that's the environment where I grew in. He was always studying and giving people lectures, and listening to that was an inspiration for me.
Maybe for people who don't know, his dad was awarded a Padma Shri. That's a big deal. He's obviously maybe underplaying it. Dad was a pretty famous person. What age were you when he got awarded the Padma Shri?
I would say 18, 19. So I was an engineer. I was the second year of engineering.
Okay. So that was when you'd grown up. But growing up, was dad involved in your studies and guiding you, or was it all mom? As you said, mom's the homemaker.
Mom was the homemaker, but as I said, if I come from a remote village, the guidance there is where it was very limited. I think I was mostly a self-driven person. My elder brothers mostly were art students. They have nothing engineering. But they were very supportive of me, what I wanted to do, how I wanted to do. They were all smart, but I ended up doing fairly well in my school, I guess extremely well in my school, which kind of helped propel them that I should do more and more. Well, I would say my mother would mostly take care of the life, all the related to that. My father was mostly as earning as the bread and but focused on the literary part of it. And I was mostly, I would say, self-driven a lot of cases with inspiration from and support from the rest of the family.
Oh, that's great to know. Were there any grandparents in the picture at all?
My grandmother was there with us when I was still 18 and 19. She was an awesome inspiration. She and me had similar habits. We always used to have a similar tea. So she was an awesome inspiration and a grounding factor for me.
So you had a good relationship with her?
I had an amazing relationship with her.
Wonderful. So now tell us a little bit about the school. As you said, it's a very remote village. Other siblings were in art. When did you, you started school and you started gravitating towards maybe the sciences, but walk us through how that happened.
I think from my very early childhood, I would say extremely good at math. At least that's what they tell me, kind of dictated to me that I didn't like blood and all that happening in doctor. So I think that was not an option for me. So I was mostly an engineering student or a science student. So I was gravitating towards two careers, which I think as I did my 12th, because that was the choice, a pivotal moment for me to take. So I took the science part of it, but most important was to go either to be a chartered accountant, because that was a mathematical thing. And I thought the other was engineering thing. So I think that kind of sort of was, because that was what was making money a lot of times. Those were the two careers you knew, either being a doctor or being chartered accountant or being an engineer. And I think the way was going towards engineering. So I ended up taking an engineering course and went to Pune University to do my engineering, which was a big leap when you come from a remote village and I'm going to now to the city and now I'm going to the actually outside of the state. That was a big deal at that time, at least for me, because coming from a little bit of a remote village, it was a big shift for me.
Just a little bit go back, the school that you were in Kashmir, how was it? Was it competitive, rigorous? Do you remember in terms of, you said you were pretty good as a student, right?
Yeah, I was the topper of the school and the topper, one of the toppers in the district and whatnot. I think the school was a public school, as good as it could be, but it was
a government school?
It was a government school. Ironically, actually, my parents thought that I was super smart and I should go to a private school. And I ended up, because I was so far from the city, so I ended up going to the private school in my 9th grade for a few days. I hated it because I found it to be so far off. First and foremost, it took me 4 hours from the city.
Oh my God.
Up and down. So by the time I was home, like as a young kid, I was like kind of done. I had headaches and whatnot. But mostly I found like a fish out of the water, to be honest. Like I found most of the kids like are talking in English. I'm not really even that kind of stuff. So I am really feeling out of this. So after 3 days, I told my parents, I am bailing out. I'm not going to that school. I feel like I can do really well. I don't know whether that was right or wrong, but that's what I ended up doing, because taking away from, I could have gone to a really good private school in 9th, 10th, which was the pivotal times to do that. But I ended up staying in a government school and did actually much, much, much better.
The school that you were in, was it, I'm talking about from the K to 9th, et cetera, was it English medium or was it a local language?
No, it was English medium, but obviously I think that the teacher standard was not that high. So it was English medium. We taught everything in English. We had Urdu as well, which we're teaching in particular. We used to listen to Kashmiri also, but the medium of all the books was English. So I had a fairly good English, but I'm just saying is the kids, sometimes all the time in cultures, like people feel like,
Out of place.
So I found out a place in my public school, and they also had drawing. Me and drawing did not go well. When I went to grade and I went to the drawing class and he asked me to build something, I was completely thrown off. And I said, oh man, I'm not set for success here. Now, maybe that I would have been pushed, but I felt too much pushed. And my brother actually took so much pains to get me to enroll to that school, but I said, I actually should go back. I don't know. Looking back, I feel like maybe I made the right choice or maybe I didn't. Who knows?
But that was also an inflection point in your life, right?
It was a big inflection point to go back to say, I'm not going to go to private school. I think a lot of cases in my life, I've always felt that I'm a self-driven. I'm in charge. I need to do things that I need to do and I can make a difference. Believe in myself in a lot of cases. And I think that self-belief made me think like that. I think that has also caused me problems in some cases, but the self-belief was that I can, if there are a lot of people who can do it, I can do it.
Where does that self-belief come from, Ramesh, in you?
I think a lot of times it is the environment that kind of reinforces that something to you. Like, will you have a belief in it? And if the system reinforces, I was kind of a, if everybody in my school or in my family would tell me that you are actually doing really well and doing stuff. So I would say the system would reinforce that into you. And that's what I think, as we say, mind is nothing but a reflection. The world is nothing but a reflection of your mind. And when your mind is actually at a point to say, you are actually doing well, you can be actually be successful in this. I think that kind of creates an environment of confidence and creates a system that tells you are actually doing well. You might not, in absolute terms, you might still be doing not fantastic, but you're doing well in the context. You're like, I think there's a saying in Urdu, which says, Andu me kana raja. Like, you are actually like that. You understand that you're the king in the this kingdom of blindness. You feel pretty good. But that's what actually makes us who we are. And like a lot of cases, we are all kings in a blindness. Some cases we have our blind spots. But if the system reinforces that, tells you, you can actually be successful and you can crack it. And anything that people would throw me any question, I would answer it without a doubt. Any competition I would go, I would actually do pretty well. But like more. So I think that those opportunities, that mentorship, that guidance, the parents telling me that you can do it and supporting me through the process. My brothers were fantastic. They knew they didn't do as good. So they were so supportive of me that you should do anything. I would, like generally we had farm as well, so we do other work, but they would completely exempt me that you don't need to do anything. We will all do that work. So system being supportive of me actually made me, I would say made me who I am.
So you have brought up a very important point because there are some philosophical differences. What you're saying is positive reinforcement is very important for, it was very important in your case because people, your siblings, your parents, everybody was telling you, you're doing great, you were doing great. Now, there are some people who say we coddle our children too much. Even if when they're not doing great, we're telling them, hey, you're doing great, just to boost their confidence. But you believe that was very important for you in terms of having that belief that you could do anything, right, Ramesh?
Yeah, I think what I believe in is that positive reinforcement is the way to go. But in a practical environment, you have to have a sandwich process. The sandwich process, you have to start with positive reinforcement. You have to inbuild a feedback system that says, you, here are the areas you need to do better, but you have to end with a positive thing again. That's the firm belief I have that how you actually do that. What you don't want to be is blind to the system. Now, in a lot of cases, I was ahead of the system. The system could not tell me it in my environment and whatnot. So they were only telling what they knew at that time. They were not trying to tell me anything wrong or right. They were just what they thought I was doing well. But if I was in a city and competing with other people, went to private school, I was doing relatively okay. Like when I went to the college, then it's a fight of equals, or you're going to the, then you are actually in a big fish pond, a big pond, you're actually challenging stuff. But that belief and faith that you have that you can cut, you can actually makes you positive, makes you believe in stuff. If you are other way around, doubting every time, I think the chances are to me that you're not going to get to your full potential, whatever your full potential is. I don't think you should be blind. You should be only positive. I think you should be balanced. But it is just how you actually praise that out.
I love that sandwich analogy. Fantastic. I'm going to use that you should have a sandwich system of positive reinforcement, balancing, and then doing that. That's fantastic. In school in Kashmir, any sports involved? Were you at all active in sports, Ramesh?
Yeah, I was always a multi used to play a cricket. I was actually vice captain of the team. I played really good. I was in the district level. I played volleyball. Those were the only two sports available in our school, in a public school. So I played for both of them. I think then there was also kabaddi tennis. I did for that. I played for that. So any sport that our school offered, I would play for that, because I was believed in that you need to balance both physical as well as the mental abilities.
Yeah, because a lot of our guests talk about sports. It teaches you humility, because there's always other people better than you. It also teaches you teamwork. So I think you make a great point. Did you make any friends during that whole school time period in Kashmir?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a number of friends there. And I think part of that is then we went through turmoil, Kashmir Garden, which is trouble. So we moved out of Kashmir. But yeah, I have a lot of those friends that still I'm in touch with, although less so now. But I moved on to the other part of the other western part of India where I studied most. But yes, I'm absolutely in touch with some of them, some of my friends from my childhood.
So Ramesh, tell us, you went back to the government school. You did well. What happened in 12th grade? You sat for your engineering exam, because I'm trying to figure out what was the process of getting to Savitri Bhai Phule University. So walk us through decision process, because that was also an inflection point in your life from many different perspectives, not just education.
Yeah, as I said, I am the only engineer in my family. I was just up. So the way I landed up in this engineering college was by accident or something, you can say, act of God. My father, his colleague's daughter was going there. She was also in my same grade, and she was going to this engineering school, and they had an interview and whatnot. And then we went, my brother came along with me, and we went for this engineering interview for the Pune University, for this engineering college in Nasik. So I would say it was, they knew I was smart. They knew everything, but my parents did not know anything how to navigate the system. They had no clue how to do that. We would look for somebody. And I think that it all depends upon opportunity is a function of what you know. How do you actually get to the system? Because sometimes you're limited by stuff and you're in the remote area, which is why my brother decided that at 11th and 12th, I should move to city. So I moved with my brother in the city, and I was around and doing that. But I landed up here, I don't know, accidentally, you can say, from the world this up, although everything happens for a reason. And that was a platform we set up. My colleague's daughter and me actually ended up being in the school. She was in a computer science and I was in electronics.
So 11th, 10th, 12th, you moved to the city with your brother?
11th and 12th, 11th and 12th.
Which school was that? That was a private or a government school?
That was still a government university, government secondary school.
Okay. But a lot more students?
Lot more students.
More competitive?
I would say more competitive, more knowledge about the system, but the school itself, I think this is a challenge in India for any public schools, is it's actually not working as good as they should. They need to figure, this is as you go to what I give back to the system, which is one part of the system, is I think it was competitive, but school itself was, the kids were competitive. Everybody knew more than that. Now I am in like bigger fish. I'm trying to figure out how to navigate the system. But still, the school itself is not that helpful. School is a platform where you are connecting with people. You know what's going on. You know where to go. You know who are the teachers you want to follow with. If you need to have a private teachers to do other stuff. So I would say it provides a platform, but it doesn't provide you all the resources that you expect in a school, because most of the people are so focused on getting the good grades and becoming the top of stuff. So sometimes a lot of studies are done yourself, have to do up your own.
But you did well?
I did reasonably well. I could have done much better, but I did reasonably well.
Okay. And then because of the colleague's daughter, you followed that part to, now this Savitri Bhai Phule is in Pune or Nasik? Nasik?
It is in Pune. It's called University of Pune. I think they have dedicated it to, I don't know, the Savitri Bhai Phule. I sometimes get myself lost. This has changed recently. I don't know, last 30 years. It's Pune University, and we had a college in Nasik called Nasik College of Engineering, where actually we studied, and there are multiple colleges affiliated to that. So I studied in Nasik, but the university was Pune.
And how was that going from, smaller place in Kashmir all the way to Pune? Tell us a little bit about that experience.
I think the first semester was hard.
Why?
I think you were like, now we're in a different part of the stuff. And when I went, I think we were there. The University of Pune, at least that time, was considered very hard. You look around, not everybody made all the grades. Not everybody were successful. It was a very tough course. And I think teachers were okay, but they were not like super standing. So I think I would just say, as you looked around, you saw that the competitiveness, which kind of infused me that we need to do even better for this time around stuff. I want to be successful here. The system, I would say, was not very, the system was growing, the college was growing, but system was challenging in this kind of stuff that not everybody graduated or got A grades or B grades or C grades. Some people also failed. And that was actually a system which you had to kind of think about. How do you become successful in this kind of environment? How do you actually challenge yourself? So which said, I needed to bring them my best and pick up the students that I wanted to be aligned with. So I had few roommates, which I think helped us a lot because we had similar thinking, similar working, and helped us do pretty well because you wanted to establish a new foundation. You are in a newer environment, which actually exposes you to a lot more things and a lot more challenges of the system.
You, as you said, maybe a big fish in a small pond. Now you became, just paraphrasing, a small fish in a big pond, and you're trying to feel your way. But luckily, your roommates and others kind of helped you through the process.
Yeah, and I think part of that is we found a small circle of people and got friends together, and that was fostered by as I said, my colleagues, daughter, and I think we created a small community, helped each other through the process, got through the process. First semester, as long as I think that transition period is critical, we did fairly well in first semester, and then you kind of build from there. I ended up doing really well. I ended up doing pretty well for the college as a degree. A lot of my friends actually did not graduate with me because they decided to take longer time or take some time off and do other things. But I actually ended up graduating in 4 years, which was kind of a novelty at that time. And I graduated really with high grades.
Fantastic. Now, this was, you were doing computers?
I was doing
electronic engineering.
Electronics.
Okay. And was it something that you were enjoying?
Absolutely. I was enjoying a lot, particularly about computers, electronics, about that, what's going on in the industry. And my brain was always, how do we build the circuits and how do I build inverters and whatnot? And I also had a fantastic internship with Siemens at my third year, which actually forced me saying that this is the path I want to take up.
So that internship helped you quite a bit?
Internship helped me, give me a real world example, because you know theoretically what you study in school, but when you bring that to life and you see it working in a factory, you see how equipment is built, what happens in the staff, how, what do you design, you work with R&D and whatnot. I think enforces and kind of challenges of what you need to do. And what it taught me is you need to have clear basics in your life. When we talk about computers, software, I always at the end of the say, today till now, silicon, it's only a semiconductor flipping on and off. It's 0 and 1. As long as you have clarity how that is happening, you will actually do pretty well. All technology will change, but you need to figure out how does the basics work and how do all of them work. Just focus on foundational concept, making sure you understand them, making sure you appreciate them. And if you're not, spend disproportionate amount of time to get to that. Then you can talk about AI, generative AI, and whatever other AI is there, once you have the concepts pretty clear.
I think you make a great point for our audience. Having core foundations, Ramesh, how can people get their core foundations? People who are now in their careers or starting their careers, for our audience, what would you suggest? Just one or two tips.
I think just going, asking the question why and why till you know the answer to a certain things, because don't take a cursory answer. Like, I feel like when I was graduating, I would put a solder iron. I knew how to kind of connect it from a solder iron to putting a chip, putting to know how the circuit worked all the way there. Today, that experience is not there. Cloud has abstracted a lot of those things, means that you don't have that experience to all that. So just being curious, I think, is to me a foundational thing about that, making sure you understand how things actually work. Because once you know that, I think everything falls into place. So I think to me, it boils down to curiosity and focusing on curiosity, that I understand why this is happening, what is happening, because there is a reason behind the reason, and there's a reason behind it for the reason. Just curiosity, I think, is a key part of it. I think the other part of being is being open to feedback. In a lot of cases, when we think about, sometimes you only know relatively. And when you come from humble background like me, I was always kind of being challenged, put on a new platform and saying, oh, you are a small fish. Most kids there came from all parts of India. And they had come from private schools, all kinds of grades and whatnot, all things. And I was this kid from a remote village that probably was like feeling out of place for some time, but now getting into the place. So that humbleness to listen and kind of build on that, I think to me is equally important.
So you made two great points for audience. Ask why and be curious and ask why of the why, and then obviously be humble enough for feedback. I think that you're saying is the foundational basis, right, Ramesh?
Correct, correct. Be humble, because you only know so much. There is so much knowledge out there. You're like a drop in the ocean. And we sometimes feel like the drop itself is the ocean, which is not true. I think the ocean is so vast. So being understanding that there is so much greatness out there, we just have to understand and appreciate it. I think we'll open the world of opportunities for all of us.
One thing you also said, Ramesh, is there, you're a kid from a small remote village in Kashmir. You met in Nasik people from probably all over the country, different languages, different, as you said, private school, English. Did that open you up, or did that make you feel you have a little bit of an inferiority complex? Well, how was that?
I think I would say first semester, as I said, was hard. I felt like a little bit inferiority complex, but I was committed that this is something I did because I want to make happen. And I think the friendship circle that was there kind of helped me come over that process, like working through the process, working hard, isolating myself. You can always go other rounds. Once you have proven yourself, you will have a success. I think then you can build upon that. Yes. I don't know whether I had an inferiority complex. I just felt like it's a big hurdle.
Maybe a challenge. Let's put it this way.
And till now, I get the feedback from most of the managers like that I take the challenges as an opportunity, because whenever there is chaos anywhere, my circle goes up, my antenna goes up. I said, this is an opportunity. I don't get wound up that the world is going to end tomorrow. I think about what can we do in this situation? What is in my control? How can I control the situation? And I feel like these life lessons, when I go from a remote village to city to college, and college, after some time I came to US and I had to figure out how to navigate US. They've helped me. I have had to deal with chaos in some cases in my life that has taught me this too shall end, and you will be able to deal with it.
Some great lessons. So that journey from remote village to then more to the city in 11th and 12th, and then to Nasik, and then obviously further on, has made you adapt, as you said, some form of chaos or change and things of that nature. And you said, this too shall pass. But you also said something that you look at chaos as so your antenna goes up and you look at it as an opportunity. How do you do that? Because not everybody can, some people can't deal with that. So again, for our listeners, how do you think of chaos as an opportunity? What happens to your antenna? Just for people who don't have your antenna, and they want to get your antenna, Ramesh, so tell us, I don't have your antenna.
I think I kind of bring down to basics. Down the basics to me, I think the challenge sometimes, which at least I feel like people have, is they associate the outcome to you. The outcome of that thing is, it is directly proportional to me being successful or not. And this comes to the beautiful thing that all of our scriptures and Bhagavad Gita talks about is outcome is not up to you. What is up to you is to give your best. And the second part of that is, I think is like when the chaos is there, it is there. You're just accepting that it is chaos. Then you have to say, how can I be the best of myself? Because it's not about ignoring that there is chaos. It's about thinking about how can you change the world? How can you challenge that world? How can you change it? Negative situation to a positive situation. How can you, because that brings the best in ourselves. Throwing stone on stone to me brings, again, this is like personal situation, but even that the chaos to me is solving a chaos is a huge opportunity. So I kind of, as I said, step back and take a deep breather, go for a walk, take a time out of the situation. Because once you are in a grind, sometimes we grind ourselves in there. Rather than saying, I'm a cog in the wheel. I am not the wheel. It's not me. It's the system that is actually what is having a trouble. Let me do my best. Whether that works out or not is not up to me. My job is to do my best. My job is not to be outcome, whether the outcome is good or not. My job is to do my best. The outcome is to be kind of figured out. And I see every time that helps us figure out, get to the right answer. And I think coming with that right mindset of less ego orientation, most focused on the outcome, focusing on yourself and not worrying about anybody else, and bringing the best of people, not worrying about men, like you need to bring our team together, but what, bringing them in a more positive construct, I think is, to me, is a success, because the chaos, I say all the time, is an opportunity. I don't look at it as chaos. I look at it, how can I do that? Or what can I do in this situation? Because we have an opportunity to solve that.
So Ramesh, you said a few things. If I can maybe challenge you, not from my side, but for our listeners. You said, the scripture said, don't focus on the outcome, do your best, etc. But at least in the times we live today, we are judged by outcomes also, results also. We are a result-oriented society in many ways. So how do people reconcile? You said, don't worry about outcomes. And here, if you are, whether it's a shareholder value, stock price, or this deadline, etc., how does our listeners reconcile to both when they're doing it through that career?
Yeah, I think it's just, to me, it's a filter you apply to yourself. It's, if you are focused on that outcome too much, the fear of failure is high. It doesn't prevent you from doing your best. So the question is not, at least from myself, when I think about doing my best, thinking about what will bring me to best. Because the time, like I'll tell you, I have in a public, when I go to public speaking, and I say, man, I am the speaker, but I say, I'm a doer in this whole process. Let me speak at this time. I pray to God, say, let me speak the best I can. If it goes wrong, it's your fault. If it goes right, it is your fault. So something like that. But you remove this whole fundamental concept of doership in the process, because that is, doesn't prevent you from that you will get the best outcome, because the outcome will be best no matter what. It is just the process. Because to me, when you think about it, this podcast is going to be fantastic. Next thing you know, the time will be saying, oh, it's not as good as you think, because you are actually oriented around. You said you did your best. The podcast is as good as, hopefully it helps somebody to orient themselves. Help somebody take this stuff. My job is not whether the podcast is fantastic or not. My job is to tell my truth story from my own honest opinion, from my heart, so that the outcome is dictated by itself, whatever the best outcome is. So I think it's just, to me, a filter how you think about disassociating to the outcome. Because when you are driven by the outcome, I think, to me, you are not at your full. Nobody is at their full potential. They are actually working less than their full potential. I think that's the question. How do you get to a full potential? So I think it's just a filter how you apply, at least in my situation. I think the second thing is, you can look at a negative construct as well. If you are thinking about to do that, you will see that. Then you get into the outcome of, okay, how are we comparing other people to do that? What is other person doing? You are doing the best. I always think about this analogy, and this is somebody actually who told me in business, is you think about what is right for the client of the company. If you are thinking from a client standpoint, what is right for the company? What's right for the group? And last, you think about what's right. Glad that I could share my story. I'm looking forward to many more of them. It's all about the system. So when you put those two together, you'll get to the right outcome. That's what I believe in. I think it has proven all the time. Sometimes it does get into trouble, because some people think, why are you speaking that? What are you doing that? I think that comes down to our trust and relationship that you have to build in the system. And I think over a period of time, I feel like it is a better way to operate rather than the other way around. Now, again, I can be proven wrong. I'm not a psychologist. I'm just telling you my own personal story.
There's a couple of points. This podcast is going to be great, so don't worry. Other thing is, I think you said, is people are really fearful of the outcome, and they maybe put a lot of pressure on them. Ramesh, let's just go back. So you did in Nasik, you were getting ready to finish your degree. What kind of prompted you, I presume, tell us what happened that brought you to the US? What was going on? How the colleague's daughter also was not coming to the US.
And no. No, I think 4 or 5 years, I had a fantastic time in India called a company called PCL, Pertec Computers Limited.
Oh, so you worked after you graduated? Tell us.
Four and a half years in India, I had an opportunity. I used to work from chips to looking at how do we manufacture, or being in a science institute to fix problems. So I had an opportunity to do the full spectrum of technology there, which actually—
Which city was this?
It was in Delhi.
It was in Delhi. You moved to Delhi from Pune?
Moved to Delhi because that's where family had moved in
So parents had moved to Delhi by then?
My brother had moved to Delhi. My parents were still in Jammu because we had moved out of Kashmir because of trouble in Kashmir. My brother was in Delhi. So obviously the job market was in Delhi. So I worked in Delhi for 5 years. Got a few fantastic foundation. I would say
is that an inflection point, that experience working at PCL?
It was, because it taught me a lot. I think there were so many awesome people. But then came an inflection point for the company itself. I think I was really happy, doing really well, being promoted, doing all the stuff. And someday the company ran into trouble. And I think you're thinking about what to do in life. And I briefly went to Siemens, but that asked me a question to say, what should be the long-term strategy to think about? So then I briefly joined a company that actually asked me to go to. I was previously asked, but I was not really interested to be going out. My father said, you should stay here and all that. He was always saying, not because of him, he said, you should work here and do other stuff. And there was an opportunity in the U.S. and I came back, and next thing you know, in 98, I came to United States, and here I am. Has been a fantastic journey from there on.
No, so what did you get a job offer to come to the U.S.? How was that?
Yeah, I think the same. I was in a company that offered me to relocate and to United States, and that's how I came to U.S. They actually was a consulting opportunity for us to do the work here in U.S.
Okay, and where did you land? Which city?
I was in Atlanta. I landed in Atlanta for 5-6 months. Then I was in Alabama for a year or so. And then here I am in Boston for the last 25 years.
Obviously, a big contrast between Delhi to Alabama and Atlanta. How was that experience? Walk us through a little bit of that.
I think the experience was fantastic, because one thing that I love about U.S. is that it's a level playing field. The more you work harder, the more you give to the company, the opportunity to me is opportunity was bigger, which is what's actually driving U.S. innovation and whatnot. So I think just having your right mindset, playing to learn and giving your best, to me, I think it leveled up the playing field and opportunities opened up themselves. I think it was not a big change, because a lot of times the same company, same environment, we used to work for that. To me, it was not a big shift. What was the big shift? How actually people approached the work and the opportunities it presented itself. I think at that time, India was still growing up, and I think maybe there are more opportunities. I don't know ground level, but I think the opportunities here are amazingly. That was fantastic to me. When I looked at it, I went to conferences, I saw things, I could see fascinating things, that exposure and the opportunity. When you combine that, the passion opportunity, I think to me, that was a fantastic thing for me, which kind of fit my persona nicely.
So in that journey, Ramesh, a lot of our guests, and they talk about the role of mentors. Now, and the mentors come in many different shapes, sizes, parents, grandparents, this, that. In this journey, have there been formal, informal mentors for you?
Absolutely. I think my parents were a big influence on me. My elder brother had a big influence on me. He would guide me all through the process. I would say is a number of my managers have been fantastic. I would not have gotten to whatever place in both in EMC and other places without awesome managers. They have been, and obviously informal managers. I would say my wife is my biggest mentor. She guides me, she challenges me, and she grounds me in some cases to say, be a human before you become a mechanical person. So I would say I am glad that I've had the opportunity to be interacting with so many people that have brought me to who I am.
So for people who don't have mentors or maybe not benefited or starting out, what should be the attitude in reaching out, or what kind of mentor should people be looking at?
I think first and foremost, it's important to have an honest conversation with your manager, because manager is an indirect conversation. We have to make sure you have a wonderful conversation to me, a wonderful conversation about your career aspirations and doing that. So manager should generally be there, as they say, managers, people work for managers, they don't work for company. I 100% believe in that, and that's why it should be an important aspect. I think the second part is you want to get a more, I would say, neutral review from somebody, because somebody who's in the line has a biased view of certain things. How do you get that mentorship guidance? It's not always possible to get to the ideal mentor you have, but whosoever it is, what are you trying to accomplish at that point in life is important to understand. I am trying to figure out how to navigate moving from one job to another. I'm trying to navigate shifting laterally. What are you trying to accomplish, and who would be the right candidate would be good. It is really important, and I give this analogy, I mentor quite a few people, is to think about, and every year I take a step back to step forward, to say, think about, you have a circle of influence. You are, whatever that circle of influence is, you need to constantly think about how do you increase that influence. You need to add as one more circle, whether that's four people, two people, three people. Today, networking is critical, important, valid. So having a mentorship can guide, show you the mirror, give you ideas that you have never thought through in a very positive construct that can expose you. So I would think a formal mentorship, I think most companies offer this as a thing. We also offer, we call it now these days, people don't have attention. So we have micro mentoring. If you need a topical mentoring, there are different forms or ways to do that to give people guidance. And I think there are a lot of people who are out there who can give you that. Companies also have leadership development programs that actually give you a lot of trainings and capabilities that do that. And I have been lucky that the company has invested in me in a lot, both from a training development, leadership, gives me exposure to things that sometimes you don't think. Or you think you don't completely think. You have a more framework and attitude. How do you think about addressing some complex problems?
You mentioned something, and I just want to get very briefly. You said circle of influence for people to develop that. Are these, and you use the word networking, these days it's become a little bit of a negative word. Can you just expand a little bit for our listeners? What do you mean by that? You said expand your circle of influence.
Yeah, I think a circle of influence is obviously people who you are interacting with. This is in work and in personal life or other places, social circles. I think we have to push ourselves. I always believe in you have to have a foundational right. This comes back to what are the key capabilities of anybody to be successful there. I wrote a blog on this 10 years ago, and I give you one of them is first and foremost, we want to operate our full potential. And for us to be operating at our full potential, there are other things to take care of, which we can get into. But it is all about these days, social media is about networking, to think about how do I build it. So you have some people who you know, but really know them, or do you know them? That's one way to, it's not always about adding more people. Maybe that's some part of it, but also increasing influence with people that you already have. So it's kind of depth and width, I call it about. How deep is you? How many people do you know? How many people do you know need to know? As a leader, it's responsibility of leader to influence without authority sometimes. It's important to connect to the leadership of the company to say, how are you going to help make decisions? I say a lot of decisions don't make in meetings. They are always done. You just come to meetings to kind of put a stamp of approval. And that takes time. That takes this informal circle. It took me a long time personally to kind of get to know that. Because most of that happens personal relationship, connection with people, understanding people's perspective. Because we at the end of the day are human beings. We're not human doings. And we're not machines. And human beings need that connectivity, need that personal touch, need that interaction to get to that, to make sure we are connecting to the individual and building that trust. Once that trust is there, then I think I'll build it. So I would think about building this trust circle that actually we have where you can actually influence on and keep on expanding. If you have people, you need to do more. If you have more people, then you need more. I have developed my own, I would call it, strategy around it. I think about every person in a work has four key stakeholders to manage. Four key stakeholders. Now, this is more hierarchical, but unfortunately, there's no other way for me to depict. I think about me being in the center. I have to manage up. I have to manage down. So how do I think about what is my circle? Is manage up, manage down. A lot of people are good managing down, as well as leaders, managers. I say they manage very good, but they don't manage up. Some people are really good managing up, but they don't manage down. The key is to balance between up and down. If you're too much balanced down, you're not actually taking care of yourself. You're not too much up, you are also doing this favor to your team. So having up and down is like two key stakeholders. You think about who are the stakeholders. I can share. I have a spreadsheet myself in my various works where I actually see how do I think about not only in your formal chain, but your informal chain that you actually want to influence. So think about up and down as a way to think about that, because isn't you? Think about left and right. Left is your peers. Peers, who are you talking to? Who are you actually interacting with? Who do you have relationship with you? Because you want to make sure you have influence about them. You're talking to them. They understand you. They have your back. Because relationships get established. Peers are the hardest relationships sometimes to build, because sometimes you're competing with them. But even having the informal relationships is kind of, to me, helps a lot. And then, obviously, number one is to understand your customers. Your customers could be end customers or could be internal customers. So thinking more of these four stakeholders in a work environment helps me figure out, who am I connecting? What's the amount of time I have? And am I dictating in a balanced time to look at all full circle or not? I don't know whether that helps or not. I can further extend.
That is fantastic. I've learned quite a bit. Just to summarize for our listeners, one thing you said is go deep and don't go wide. Sometimes that's difficult but then you said manage up and manage down, but manage left and manage. As you said, a lot of people predominantly try to manage up and they forget managing down because they assume it's all going to happen. But they also, as you said, manage your peers. People forget that also. So fantastic input, Ramesh, on that. That's a great point. And you said you have a spreadsheet that kind of you do for managing this. Unbelievable. Fantastic.
And I think when you think about managing up, it's not only your formal chain. You have to look at formality. You have to think about every company has a structure, you need to think about who are those people that you want to get to know. Because just having curiosity that I want to talk to somebody. And because
can they be outside the company also?
They can absolutely be outside of the company. This is within the company. They can be outside of the company. How do I connect to those people? How do I learn from that? Your job, I say to myself, the only choice I have is to be at my full potential. That's the only choice I have in this life. I can't tell you what to do. I can't tell anybody else what to do. But I can tell myself to be at my full potential. And that is our responsibility towards ourselves. And to be that, you need to connect and network to do that. We can talk about a few more things that I think is important for people to realize as leadership roles. What are the key things to ground you, to balance you? Because to me, if you are not balanced, I think it is important. I think then you will be riding into some rough weather or some dead ends that may cause you some trouble. You can run hard, but till you are grounded and balanced, it's very difficult to keep running hard.
Yeah. No, those are excellent points. I mean, I've learned a bunch and I'm sure our audience has too. Ramesh, when you look back, and we already talked about moving, not going to the private school, an inflection point, going to Savitribai Phule being an inflection point, coming to the US being an inflection point. Are there other inflection points that were there? And looking back, do you think you could have done something differently? Again, this is helpful to our listeners. That's why I'm asking.
No, I think they are the big reflection points. I think one, this may be hard for people to realize, sometimes it's hard for me also. As I look at, and I believe there's a bigger power, whether we believe that's God, soul, whatever we want to call it, I have this firm belief in myself, whatever happens for good. Hard to understand that. So whatever happened was the way the best it could have happened. Because nature doesn't do anything wrong if we really believe in that. So accepting that is a we thing. Now, we should learn from that. We shouldn't be blind that I can't do my best. But that's what association comes into the picture. To me, everything that's happened sometimes, we get overwhelmed. Can I change the world? No, I can't change the world. I can change myself. Once I change myself, perception of the world will change. Because I can't change you. I can't change the weather. I can't change somebody yelling at somebody else, but I can change myself. What can I do in that situation? I have a firm belief in that. And maybe one or two things about that. I do think today, what this world needs is leadership. Most important today. And there's industry debate whether leaders are made or leaders are born or whatnot. I do believe there are key things to be. The morning hours in a day are the most critical time for everybody. I think if I think about learning for myself, as I grew up, took on bigger roles, it was important for me to be disassociated with the problem, is to have a time for my own self. I get up right now. I would sleep so late, maybe 1 a.m., 2 a.m., and then get up It's not. It's very important to be grounded. So I, these days, sleep at 10 o'clock, most of, and then I'm at 5 o'clock and get up. I meditate, I walk, I run, generally depend. Because to me, those morning hours are golden. They give you so much power, so much energy to bring your best self. Because again, I think about myself. What is my in my control is to bring the best of myself every day. There's no nothing I can deter me. There are challenges in the system that you have to deal with, but it is up to me to be the best of myself. I think that is key as a foundational level to take care of ourselves. I call it physically and mentally. If you took care of me physically and not taken care of mentally, I think it's a challenge. You're going to be imbalanced. In some cases, the balance will hit you. I think the second important thing is to be having curiosity, which we talked about. The curiosity is today, the world is changing at a pace that is unprecedented. When you have the foundation, having the curiosity and learning mindset will help you kind of go through that process. I think third important thing to me is a gratitude. I think we always think about what I don't have. The human mind is wired, and when we think about we have grown up overall from this life of, we were always running and we were fighting for food every day, and we have this mindset of going up. Not wrong, but we also need to have a gratitude to say, what have I accomplished and who have helped me through this process? This thinking of what I call as appreciating your gratitude, appreciating your family, appreciating the friends, appreciating the system, actually gives you a sense of relief that you are there because of somebody else. You're not there of your own, because you can't do anything, because the system has to be, this whole world is wired, whether we believe it or not, the system is connected. The water you eat, we are what the five elements give you, water, earth, fire, all of that is who creates us. And that makes us our physically and mentally. So thinking about how do we take about the nature that has taken care of, whether we believe that nature yourself or not, I think is very important. Expressing gratitude, having a opportunity to do that. And I think that maybe fourth one I would think about is challenging the status quo. When somebody, this is not possible, that doubly challenges me, saying this is the way where you can step up, not in a negative context. Thinking about taking a pause. Okay, that's a point of view you have. I understand and appreciate that. Let me find the facts. To me, that is, I love the thing. I think what Napoleon said is, impossible is in the dictionary of fools. And I do believe that. I say possible says I am possible. If you double click it. Now, there are things impossible, so you shouldn't be blind to that. But going with a mindset that I'm going to crack this code, that will unlock opportunities that are beyond comprehension.
That's so much amazing things you said. Get up early in the morning, take some time to really think about things yourself. Be curious, which you've talked several times about. Gratitude, I think, which is very important. And challenge the status quo. Incredible leadership points you've made. Ramesh, towards the end, we go through a lightning round of questions. If you can just give us brief answers for some of these things. Can you just tell us, has your definition of success changed when you were coming to the U.S., you must be thinking of something, and maybe now your definition is a little different?
Absolutely. I think the definition of success has evolved today. The definition was material in a lot of cases, that I should have this much and that much. Today, the definition is, how can I make somebody else successful? How can I give back to the society? How can I be the best citizen of this universe that actually is serving the world? So I think today, definition has certainly changed.
Our show is called Indianness, so give us your definition of Indianness.
I think India has been, to me, a culture and a society which is so vast. India is itself, to me, a continent which embraces a lot of cultures, a lot of things, which teaches a lot of things to you. So to me, a culture that embraces and enriches and challenges in a flexible ecosystem is Indianness. It doesn't have to be connected to geography or whatnot, but because India embodies that kind of stuff, is good. Because that tells you that you're welcome to the society. As I said, we're not alone on this universe. We are connected to the ecosystem. We breathe the air we do. We drink the water we have. This is all connected ecosystem. So we need to be connected to the ecosystem that we have, and we need to express gratitude towards that. So to me, that is like key part of the system, is to be connected to the foundation you are, where you are, what you want to do. That's one key part of. I think second part of it is about being balanced. And being balanced is material success will get you some things, and that is important, and I understand and appreciate that. But being that will run out of steam. If that was the case, all the rich people would be the happiest people. Most rich people are the most miserable people on this universe in some cases. And I shouldn't say that, but more abstractly, if you look at last 50 years, the world has grown materially drastically, but the happiness index is going the destruction. I think the key thing is, what are you doing that makes you human? That makes us who we are, because we are human, the highest creation in this universe. And the highest creation in the universe has a responsibility towards the system that we need to live sustainability and we need to give back system. I think once you do that, once we do that, I shouldn't say do, once we all do that, I think we will live a life of purpose.
That's very profound. Ramesh, who's been the one, and I emphasize one, most influential person in your life's journey?
My wife.
Ah, good answer.
Ramesh,
she'll be watching this podcast at some point, Ramesh.
I don't think she will, not that because I'm saying this is a death. I think she has, and I didn't get to that. As I came to US, one of the things we changed, the reason I'm saying is, I was actually deeply technical. I wanted to be an architect. I never wanted to take a leadership role. She's the one, she challenged me saying, you actually are pretty good in leadership role. You should take that. If you were one person that actually changed my trajectory, is my wife.
That's a excellent point. Inflection point, change trajectory, amazing. Nike's tagline is just do it. What is Ramesh's tagline?
I think my tagline is be, just be. I think I should repeat, we're an entity in this whole system. We need to understand and appreciate just be.
Fantastic. Ramesh, thank you so much. This has been so insightful. I personally learned a bunch of things, go up, go down, go left, go right, go deep, go wide, many other things. And I'm sure our listeners are going to enjoy this. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Glad that I could share my story. I'm looking forward to many more of them.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Indianist Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future inspirational stories.